Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
It's time for Politics by Night. This is our weekly politics chat segment where we invite on someone from the press gallery to have a chat about some of the big and interesting and incongruous political stories of the week. Our guest, our correspondent today, is Ben Mackay, who covers New Zealand for the Australian Associated Press. Ben, kia ora to you.
Good evening, Emil. How are you?
I'm good. What did you think of that disturbed cover of Sound of Silence?
I wondered what I'd got myself into, to be honest. I wondered if it was a harbinger or something to come.
Yeah, that's covers week.
Can I get a little nutty as a result? Can I get a little disturbed?
It's covers week on Night, and people are sending through some sensational and very interesting suggestions. All right. Ben, there's only one place to start today, and that is with all of this China spy hack carry on. I imagine you've been covering this for much of today. How did it all kind of unfold from your point of view?
An interesting one. I mean, it's one of those days where you sort of go to work, and if you're listening to the radio, you're getting the sense that there's a bit of a story brewing in the UK and the US about Chinese interference, but at that stage, there wasn't really a New Zealand tie-in. That came around 9 a.m. when the statement from Judith Collins dropped, and it really made things local because as the spies admitted, it was the first time that actually admitted openly that the Chinese government had backed a group that was attacking New Zealand's democratic institutions.
It's was it an unusually direct statement from Judith Collins? I note that in the RNZ bulletins, you know, they're saying New Zealand has named and shamed China. Has our approach been unusual as far as these sorts of diplomatic issues go?
Well, I mean, for New Zealand, yes. I mean, my background reporting in Australia are a lot more upfront when it comes to China, and I think there's obviously a reputation that New Zealand has of being quote-unquote soft on China or a little bit passive or a little bit sort of willing to let things slide. So the answer to that is yes. But this debate is a little bit like fighting one-handed because you're short of so much information. Mm. Like there was a moment today in the press conference in Defence House where the GCSB chief and the NCSC chief, that's the National Cybersecurity Centre, sort of looked at each other to say, how much should we tell these guys about it? And that was the moment that we found out that China was also targeting MPs as well as the Parliamentary Council. So, I mean, yes, you've got to sort of take it all and sort of also fill in some blanks and sort of give people the benefit of the doubt that it is the appropriate response.
I mean, what's the kind of, maybe I should have led with this, like what's the meat and potatoes of the story? So basically, New Zealand's Parliamentary Service and Parliamentary Council Office were targeted a few years ago, 2021, in a China-linked cyber attack. What does that actually kind of mean?
Yeah, great question. I mean, I would love to be able to tell you, but people won't speak about it. So it's an attempt to jam these organisations and to take data. And the chiefs told us today that no sensitive information was taken. There was a little bit of data that was taken that was a bit of a nothing burger. I guess the bigger issue is that they're trying to do it.
Right.
So I mean, the issue where Judith Collins today said that China was a very good friend. Chris Luxon wouldn't repeat that language, but I mean, it's a very good friend that's also using cyber warfare and cyber espionage to try and get privileged information within New Zealand's democracy.
What? I mean, yeah, as you say, you know, there is a suggestion here that these are cyber attacks, malicious cyber activities. What are the government's options? What's in their toolkit in terms of ways to approach or retaliate here? We've ruled out sanctions, right?
Yeah, I mean, New Zealand actually can't levy sanctions. Mm. It doesn't have a legal framework to levy sanctions right. unless it's got a backing from the UN. The exception to that is obviously Russia. A couple of years back when it invaded Ukraine, the government actually moved legislation to allow a sanctions regime on Russia, which continually sort of adds people to as we go. There's not a willingness to do that here. And very interestingly, Andrew Little, who was interviewed on another radio station today, suggested one of the reasons that they didn't want to do that was because New Zealand actually feared being shaken down or stirred up or by other friendly powers to levy sanctions. So in this situation, if New Zealand had that regime in place, they might be argued very strongly by, say, the UK, say the US, say Australia, to actually sanction China, which is not something that it wants to do. But I would say also, the thing that you don't want to do is you don't want to follow Scott Morrison, who effectively went right. postal at China a few years ago, very memorably, when he sort of linked COVID-19, sort of all sorts of accusations around COVID-19 and over-egged the pudding, and Australia found itself on the receiving end of billions of dollars worth of tariffs. So there's obviously a middle ground, and New Zealand believes it's walking it.
What's China saying about this?
It's outright denial, yeah. And it's also fairly restrained, I would have thought. I mean, it says things like, "Don't you're barking up the wrong tree," and then it goes on to say how important the relationship is to China. This is in a statement issued by the Chinese ambassador late this afternoon. So the recent visit as well, you'll remember that the foreign minister, Wang Yi, visited last week. And that visit was seen as a sort of olive branch and a relationship building exercise. So China, in that light, its statement is sort of saying, well, let's not, you know, obviously we disagree with this. We don't think this is real at all, and we deny it. But at the same time, we have this really broad friendship and interwoven, you know, people-to-people links, trade links, all the rest of it, and we shouldn't throw that out, which is the same thing that Chris Luxon was saying today.
Must be kind of weird for you, being an Australian journalist who works for an Australian publication, Australia having a much more turbulent and sort of strong-worded, sometimes adversarial relationship with China, seeing this in New Zealand.
Yeah, I mean, I've sort of wandered the halls today looking for people that sort of see this the same way as I do. And I thought I might have found one in David Seymour, because he was a bit of a China hawk in opposition, would be more willing to sort of talk about the threats that China might face, in a military sense or coming at it from the perspective of being an autocracy. Even he suggested that New Zealand was walking the right path on this. Just to go through some of the other responses, if you'd like.
Sure.
As I said, Collins said China was still a very good friend. Winston Peters, we didn't really get a line from Mr. Peters today, as he only really wanted to talk about the Serious Fraud Office issue. Chris Hipkins, obviously he was in government when the attack happened.
Yeah.
Jacinda Ardern's not around to ask about how she would have dealt with it, but Chris Hipkins said that the government still was in the process of elevating and sort of going through the information as to whether they would bring it to the surface. They obviously didn't get there. He also didn't raise the issue on his visit to China. He's the only leader in recent times that's been on a state visit to China last year. And when I asked the Greens whether they'd like to make a comment, they opted to pass. So there's just not a constituency for going a bit harder on China in this country.
Speaking of Chris Hipkins, that segues to something else that we should probably talk about. The leader of the Labour Party has been talking about tax. That was then and this is now, is RNZ's headline on this. Some ideas that were ruled out in the past are all of a sudden front and centre and on the table once again.
Don't you think it's just so refreshing that Labor is finally having a conversation about tax?
Right, yeah, interesting.
Finally throwing it into the mix. I mean, it does feel like this is a bit different, because the last decade we've obviously had, and I spoke with Grant Robertson, had a chance to sit down with him, who was very generous with his time ahead of his valedictory, because obviously he's, you know, he was finance spokesperson or finance minister for a decade, either in one of those two roles. They obviously lost the 2011 election after promising a capital gains tax. They lost the 2014 doing the same. Jacinda Ardern ruled it out at 2017. Then she ruled it out forever in 2019. Mm. And then Chris Hipkins ruled it out again in 2023. So they really gone this journey on the capital gains tax. So I would have thought all roads will lead to a wealth tax this time. Now, we know that's more popular. It's just a question of how they get there and avoid these sort of wealth flight concerns. Mm. And I guess the question is as well, is this the moment for Labor to be throwing out that they want to be taxing more? And are they capable of winning a political argument at the moment of its own choosing? They're doing quite well, I think, on opposing some things. You know, we've seen them make gains on things like smoke-free, where there's been wee blunders by the government. But we haven't really seen them prosecute something from scratch under this new opposition. And we're sort of waiting to see the shift of what they stand for.
Do you sense any grumbling, like, as you went through there? You know, Labor have historically ruled out capital gains and wealth taxes, consecutive elections. A lot of critics might say that that was down to sort of political expediency and the feeling that maybe they would alienate some of the electorate by doing that. Turned out that they alienated the electorate anyway. Has there been a bit of grumbling that you've noted from Labor Party faithful? Oh, now you do it once you've just had a crushing defeat.
Yeah, I mean, the moment was 2019, right? I mean, at that moment, there were more. The National Party was sort of gaining some steam. COVID came, and Ardern ruled it out. And then, of course, COVID happened. They became insanely popular. Mm. They would have had a mandate to do that. They decided to respect the decision that they'd made in 2019, when the political calculus was very different. I mean, there are definitely a lot of views in the Labor caucus around tax. I mean, David Parker, and one of the more unremarked about things during the last election, resigned his portfolio. He resigned as revenue minister in the middle of a sort of maelstrom because of the Chris Hipkins' inability to follow through with their planned sort of tax plans. They opted for the sort of wet lettuce nose GST on fruit and vegetables. Fruit and vegetables.
Yeah. That was a fascinating time, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
can I say one other thing?
Sure, go for it.
I do think that it's probably time for us to learn a bit more about Chris Hipkins and what he stands for. Like, the feeling that I got from covering the last election was that so much of Labor was sort of driven as a back us for what we've done rather than back us for where we're going to take you. There wasn't a lot of that vision. And a lot of policies, and the GST is the perfect encapsulation, appeared to be sort of compromised by the fiscal environment, or it's not really what we want to be doing, but it's what we can afford, like the dental, which didn't really go that far either. And the only time we saw him get fired up, I think, was the bedlegs comment in a debate, or he went into bat for LGBT people a little bit. And I think that if Chris Hipkins is going to make it to the next election, and he's every chance of doing that, if you know, he can pick up a bit of steam, it is time to be a bit more bolder.
From one leader to another, and Christopher Luxon was moved to comment on environment issues due to a yacht race, a sailing race over the weekend, Ben.
He was. He sees New Zealand as being an obstruction economy and too wrapped up in red tape because of the issue of the dolphin in the water. Has this been well traversed? Do we need to?
Let's talk about it just quickly, because it was a story that sort of had its time over the weekend, but then Christopher Luxon's comments on it were sort of interesting. What was the thrust of what he said?
So the SailGP obviously didn't sail, the big sailing regatta that's come to Christchurch. Luxon believes it's emblematic of it fits in with his mojo, New Zealand's lost his mojo sort of routine. That being that, you know, to stage these global events, we need to make some better decisions. We need to get rid of the things that are stopping us. I mean, what was missing from this debate, I think, was the fact that SailGP signed up for the regulations itself. Before the event, it was touting the regulations that looked after dolphins as an industry-leading, it was championing its environmental bona fides. Today, I caught up with Shane Jones, actually. He's one of the people responsible for actually the regulations around it. You might remember at the end of last year, Shane said in Parliament, in his pro-mining agenda, he said, if there is a mining opportunity and it's impeded by a blind frog, well, goodbye, Freddy.
Right.
Okay. And today he said, Doc have bought into a level of deification of all these sea mammals. In my view, there are thousands of hectares of dolphins, so we don't need to worry too much. People need to live, eat and prosper in New Zealand. So it does appear like there's an appetite for environmental regulations mm-hmm. being washed away. One other thing I would say about this, the local MP, Vanessa Wienick, said something interesting on Midday Report. She said that the dolphins should be shooed away. And I thought that was quite funny because it would be quite hard to shoo a dolphin away. but it turns out, I've got a mea culpa of my own, it turns out that's not as batty an idea as I thought, because Shane Jones said that the fishing industry do have a device that sends out a sonic signal to drive away dolphins from nets.
Look
so there
that.
You go.
Hey, we have the technology. Ben Mackay, lovely chatting to you. Thanks very much for your time tonight.
Pleasure. Have a good night.
It's Ben Mackay. Ben covers New Zealand and particularly New Zealand politics for the Australian Associated Press.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.